Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to Infertile AF, the podcast. This is episode 345 called Savannah Bisbee. This episode is sponsored by Extend Fertility. Fertility shouldn't be dictated by a timeline. Extend Fertility offers cutting-edge egg and embryo freezing, infertility care, and IVF, all designed to put you in control. Their approach? Research-driven, transparent, and personalized. With a world-class lab, exceptional verified success rates backed by nearly a decade of egg freezing results, and pricing lower than the national average, Extend Fertility is making reproductive care more accessible and effective than ever. Whether you're preserving fertility for the future or actively trying to conceive, they're here with expert support every step of the way. Learn more at extendfertility.com. Again, that's extendfertility.com. Thanks, Extend. Okay, before we get started, you all know that I'm very passionate about normalizing the conversation around IVF and building your family through ART, and I have two children's books out right now. Beautiful Bird is my newest one, and the first one is called Work of Art. It's my family's story about having my son after secondary infertility through IVF. The third book is being printed right now, so that will be out a little bit later this year, but if you guys are interested, go check out both the books at infertileafgroup.com, and you can see more on my Instagram at infertileafstories. Also, don't forget to check out Fertility Rally if you're looking for a safe place to land. We support everybody going through any sort of infertility or surrogacy or IP journey or donor conception journey, all the things. We are here for you. So please come check us out at fertilityrally.com or on Instagram at Fertility Rally. We have support groups. Blair and I host one every Wednesday night virtually. So if you want to check out a group before you commit, you are more than welcome to. Just shoot me a DM and we will make it happen. Again, it's Fertility Rally, the worst club with the best members. Okay, my guest today, Savannah Bisbee, is such a beautiful person inside and out. And she's been through so much on her own infertility journey, including endometriosis and pregnancy loss. And she is here today to tell you the whole story. It's her first podcast, actually. So you probably follow her on Instagram at Infertility Friends, but this is her first big, full, long podcast interview, or first podcast interview at all. So without further ado, this is Savannah's infertility story. Hi, Savannah. I'm so honored that this is your very first podcast.
Hi, Allie. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Thank you so much for doing this. I have talked to you before through Fertility Rally, but we've never done a one-on-one convo. So I'm really looking forward to you sharing your story. I know you've been through a lot, and I really appreciate you being so open. And let's start with what I always love to ask, which is, have you always wanted to have kids?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think as a woman, that like you hear that story, like this was my dream growing up, and I definitely connect to that and think, you know, about my past and my childhood and growing up and being like, I always wanted this motherhood. And it's always been in my heart that this was my dream and what I wanted to do and be when I grew up. I think so many young girls, when they say, what do you want to be when you grow up? We don't necessarily think of careers. We think of kids and becoming mothers. And so for me, that was always a dream. And I know that's not everybody, but I think a lot of us women feel that way growing up.
Okay. So let's fast forward a whole bunch. How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband through, I was working at a bar through college, and he would come in there and kind of flirt with me. And I wasn't interested. I was like dating this other guy at the time. And so, but he was pretty persistent in pursuing me. And eventually I thought he was super like kind of charming, and we had great conversations, and I liked that he was persistent. And so I had gotten out of this other relationship that I was in, and I kind of like told him, I was like, oh, I broke up with so-and-so, and snowballed from there. And so we went on like our first date, and we're pretty much inseparable ever since. And then we got engaged and married within 6 months of like the engagement. So
I love that.
In December and married in July. So it was like a short engagement, and we got married right away. And we knew we were going to start trying for kids right away too. So it was one of those things where we were like, hopefully we have a honeymoon baby. And you know, looking back right. on it now, I felt so naive, but that was like, you know, our story and our dream was we're ready to get married and settle down and have kids. And so
yeah.
here we are 6 years later, we just celebrated 6 years.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. So did you have the same visual of how you wanted your family to look? It was like, we want X amount of, okay. So you were on the same page about
that.
So
like our first date, it was like, do you want kids? And he was like, yeah, I want all girls. Like, I just like have this dream that I'm going to have all girls, like three girls. And I was like, that's funny because I always thought I would be a boy mom and I always thought I would have boys. And so we were kind of just like, you know, that was one of our first conversations. And we're like, all right, so we'll be happy with no matter what we get.
But right. So I know that endo comes into play in your story, right?
Yeah.
Did you know growing up that you had that, or when were you diagnosed with that? Okay. So that's part of the fertility journey. Okay.
Yeah. So I think with endometriosis, like I personally think it's so under-researched. And of course, growing up, I saw doctors and OBGYNs and, you know, went through the process. Do you have heavy periods? Yes, I've always had heavy periods. And doctors will look at you and say, well, that's normal. And you don't know anything else. I mean, I only know the period that I've had. I only know it from my perspective. And so when so many doctors tell you this is normal, that's normal, then that's what you believe. And then when it came, I didn't get my endo diagnosis until I started fertility treatments. And so we did 5 IUI cycles and none of them were successful. And then we moved on to IVF, and my doctor at the time sat us down and she was like, you're young, you're healthy. I really think IVF is, you know, the next step for you. This is something that you should do if you want to grow your family. And so we did. We decided to move forward with it. And my first egg retrieval, everything was picture perfect. My hormones were picture perfect. All of my scans were going great. All of my follicles were looking great. The egg retrieval came and the doctor, my RE, was like, we got 24 eggs. And I always tell people, like, I was on cloud nine. I'm like, we got 24 eggs. That is amazing. I mean, it's a high number. And you know with IVF that there's the attrition and you constantly have that anxiety about it. So I went home feeling just so grateful that we got 24 eggs. And then I got the phone call the next day about our fertilization rate. And my doctor's tone was completely different. It was like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm okay. And they were like, well, we didn't do as well as I hoped, is what the first thing that they said.
And my heart sinks. Dropped. Yes, yeah. Right. Yes, like, totally.
What does that mean? You know, we didn't do as well as we hoped, because in my mind, I'm like, we got 24 eggs. Like, that's a great number. And my doctor was on the line and she's like, we didn't do as well as we hoped, as I'd hoped. Out of your 24 eggs, 13 of them were mature, and we fertilized all of them via ICSI, and only 2 of them fertilized. And I was like, just my ears started ringing. It was like I kind of blacked out for a second.
Right. I'm like, out of body.
What just happened? And with little explanation, we did a fresh transfer with that cycle. She was like, I recommend that we transfer them day 3. I think they have a better shot in your body than they do in the lab, and you have 2 of them. They're looking great. So we'll see you in a couple of days to do the transfer. And I was
And they were going to transfer both?
Yeah. And okay. I was like, okay, wow, this was a complete 180 of what I had expected was going to happen and what I had hoped was going to happen was that we would be able to do a day 5 transfer. We would be able to freeze the rest of them. And now we were in the situation where it was like, okay, we're going in 2 days. We're transferring the only 2 embryos that we got from this IVF cycle. And it was kind of like a whirlwind. And I always tell people, you don't know what you don't know. So I didn't know that this was going to happen. I didn't know much about day 3 embryos going into it, going into the process. I didn't know anything about endometriosis going into this process. So that phone call, I said, why do you think only 2 of my eggs fertilized? And she said, I think you may have a disease called endometriosis and that it's affecting your egg quality, but we can talk about that more after we get through this transfer. And like this pregnancy is what she had said, you know, hoping that we would be able to get pregnant with the fresh transfer.
Right.
So I said, okay, I hung up the phone, cried to my husband. And I remember the words, I looked at Rocky, and excuse me if I get emotional at all throughout this podcast.
No, please. I get emotional at Rocky every
episode. And I was like, I'm never going to be a mom. Like,
oh,
I thought this was it, and I'm never going to be a mom.
And he just hugged me and he was like, you know, it's not over yet. And just that day, it hit me that it wasn't going to be as easy as I thought it was going to be, and that we were just going to have to fight harder than I expected. So that was my endometriosis diagnosis. I always say was like the most traumatic part of my IVF experience, because it was the last thing that I'd ever thought was going to happen.
Right.
And it's just a part of our story. It's a part of our journey. And I know so many women go through different things with that. I mean, everybody's journey and story looks different, but
I
feel like so much of it changes and shapes, you know, kind of who we are and our expectations of, you know, our fertility moving forward. And
Absolutely.
That was a pivotal moment.
Yeah. I feel like, okay, there's so much to unpack of what you just said.
Yeah.
So I do want to backtrack a little bit and ask you, you mentioned you did the 5 IUIs. What happened leading up to that? Were you guys just trying, you know, not using protection?
We tried naturally. I would say we tried naturally for about 3 years. And then when it wasn't happening, we started to go to doctors, and we started at my OB. And, you know, she ordered basic tests, blood work, ultrasound, a semen analysis for Rocky. So we did, you know, the basic fertility testing. And Rocky started seeing a urologist for semen analysis. And I went through the blood work, the ultrasounds. I did an MRI, and there was no endometriosis diagnosis from that. And then I did the HSG tests, you know, all the basic things that
you
would order.
Right, exactly. And how is this affecting you guys, like mentally? I know, you know, you said you came out of the gate that, you know, we want to make a family right away. This must have been so hard. I'd love to hear like about the mental load that you were holding at this
point. I think with fertility in general, especially when you're looking for answers, there's so many highs and lows, and there's so many conflicting emotions. Like we would have a test done and it was like, well, hopefully we get answers from this, but hopefully nothing's wrong. But we also want answers. Like, why isn't this happening? But I hope it doesn't come back bad. So it was kind of like a lot of highs and lows of, you know, we were excited to get answers, but we were hopeful that nothing was really wrong with either one of us. And I think it's extremely stressful on us as women, because we do carry the brunt of fertility. But walking alongside it with my husband, who also was getting his test done, and then he has to see the emotional toll that it takes on me going through the process, and that affected him too. And so 100%. I started therapy years ago because I needed that outlet of talking to somebody about everything that comes with fertility treatments. And so therapy was really helpful for me and for Rocky too. But I think just the highs and lows of not knowing what to expect, but also wanting to find answers was really hard for both of us.
Yeah. And you said it so well, you know, you want to get answers because then it kind of can potentially help you hone in on the issue and how to treat the issue and, you know, what the treatment plan will be. But it's also like, oh my God, I hope everything's okay. And there's so much mental gymnastics that goes into that.
Yeah.
And it's like the ultimate mind fuck, you know, like it's like because you're in such a place.
And then you're like, how many doctors am I going to have to see before I get answers?
Absolutely.
When we first started fertility treatments, we had no fertility coverage. There was really nothing. I mean, they would cover some blood work, but they didn't cover our IUIs. And so we decided, okay, well, we'll start with IUIs and see where we go from there. And they weren't all in a row. I mean, you know, life happens and we couldn't do month to month, back to back and stuff like that. But I think we went into it saying we were going to do 3 and then life happens.
Yeah.
And we just weren't ready to take the step towards IVF.
100%.
And so in our mind, we were like, okay, well, let's just do IUIs until we feel like we are more ready to jump into, you know, this if need be. And so we ended up doing 5 IUI cycles. And my clinic does something called double insemination, which a ton of people always ask me about.
Yeah, so tell us about that.
IUI, we would go in 2 days in a row. And the first day we would do
an insemination. And then the second day we would go back and do another insemination. So a lot of people would ask me about that. It really is just back-to-back inseminations. And hopefully, you know, the more sperm you get up there, the higher chance you would have of getting pregnant. So we did that each time. And unfortunately, they all failed. And then that's when we did two egg retrievals. We did two rounds of IVF last summer.
Okay. Can you tell me about making that pivot to IVF?
Yeah, I knew a few people in my personal life. Like I knew of people, but I didn't have very close personal friends that had walked through IVF. And that's part of the reason I started my social media page is I wanted to connect with and meet other women that were going through something similar. And I wanted to be able to connect with them and say, you know, how did you make this decision? And what clinic did you choose? And how did it go for you? And how did you feel on certain medications? Like I wanted to be able to make those connections with women. And when I had first started my Instagram page, I feel like a lot of people don't know this, but when I first started it, I was completely anonymous. Like I did not post pictures of myself or my name. It was like an anonymous fertility account. And I wanted it to just kind of be on the down low because I didn't want everybody to know that this is what we were going through. And it quickly catapulted into, you know, me sharing quite literally almost everything that goes on in our fertility journey. And I've made so many IVF infertility friends in the community that have really helped me process a lot of the things that we've gone through. And then I would say, obviously, cost is a factor because it's so expensive. It's so overwhelming to sit down and a doctor tell you,
like, oh my God, yes,
$25,000. And you're like, you know,
each time. Yeah, exactly.
So, and there's no guarantee it works, but you're going to spend all this money. And so then we had to sit down and talk about the financial aspect of how are we going to afford this? How are we going to pay for the medications and what insurance isn't or doesn't cover? I would say connecting with other women was probably what helped me the most.
Because
you don't know what you don't know, but when you connect with other people, it helps you kind of understand what's going to happen in the process.
Totally. And we always talk about this in rally and like on our rally calls that, you know, you kind of can cut through like all that BS. It's like the instant bond of like, you know, so much about each other immediately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost like you've known people for years and years and years because there's such a almost like a trauma bond, but also just like experience bond, you know, like everybody knows.
I met some of my great, like to this day, like women that I met this time last year that I still talk to on a daily basis.
Totally.
And there's some of my really great friends in this community that I would have never met otherwise. So I'm extremely grateful for that.
Right. Was it scary to make the leap from anonymity to putting yourself out there?
Yeah. And I feel like there were people in my personal life that were kind of mad at me for like not telling them or not including them in something so personal. And like when I had started the account, I would block people. Like I'd be like, okay, I don't want this person to see it. I don't want this person.
Oh, wow.
I definitely don't want this person to see it because it was so, it was just like such a deep decision to make, you know, is this something we're going to do? And then you're so hopeful that it's going to work so quickly and you're going to be able to get pregnant and you want to announce it to your friends and family in this, you know, special, surprising way that, you know, you kind of want that shock factor of like, they don't know what's coming. And so I didn't want everybody in my life to see my social media page. And I quickly realized that I wanted to openly be able to share my journey after so many months of trying, years of trying, and then months of IUIs, and quickly opened it up to the public with my face and my name and all of those things.
Right.
And it's been the best decision I could have ever made. I've made so many connections. I've met so many amazing women. And it's forced hard conversations with people in my personal life that have helped my relationships there as well. So maybe there would have been things I would have never been able to say or talk about with some of my friends if I hadn't taken the leap to publicly share on social media.
And tell me a little bit about that after you did the first transfer. Let's start from there.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Last summer felt so traumatic in so many ways. Like, so our first round of IVF obviously didn't go as we had hoped. And we had 2 day 3 embryos and we did a fresh transfer. So 3 days after my egg retrieval, I went into my clinic and I was not feeling well after my egg retrieval. I was pretty sure I was developing OHSS, which stands for ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome. I was super bloated, super uncomfortable, shortness of breath, just having a hard time getting around. So I was adamant to my doctor, like, you have to scan me before we do this transfer because I want to make sure my body's in the right place. And so we went in early, we did the scan, and my doctor looked at me and said, today's the day. Like, we're doing, today's the day to do it. And I said, okay.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So we did the transfer, still super hopeful that everything was going to be okay. I mean, my hormones, like I said, were textbook perfect. My estrogen never got too high. My progesterone never got too high. And so we decided, based off our doctor's recommendations, to do the fresh transfer. So we did on day three. And then the roller coaster of things that happened between our transfer and the pregnancy test. So we did the day three transfer. And then 3 days after that, I ended up in the emergency room because I had OHSS so severe that I didn't know what else to do. So I went to the emergency room.
And you were in pain, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm pregnant until proven otherwise. So I'm like, what? What can they even do for me? I don't know, but I've never been in this situation. I've never been this uncomfortable. And so I went to the emergency room and I knew it wasn't good when I didn't have to wait in the emergency room. Like, they took me back right away.
Yeah.
And I told them, you know, I'm an IVF patient. I just did a transfer. My levels are going to show you that I'm pregnant because we did a trigger shot and all of those things. And they were like, well, we can give you morphine. And you know, I'm in my mind, like, can you give me morphine? Is that okay? And so I refused it. And then they did a bunch of scans. They measured my ovaries. They did the ultrasounds and it was very uncomfortable. And basically they came into the room a few hours later and they're like, we've called your IVF clinic and they want you there first thing in the morning. I was like, okay. And they basically sent me home.
But did they tell you anything? Like, did you know what was happening other than that you're in like crazy
pain? They
really
didn't. They said, we called your doctor.
That's so hard.
Yeah. It was like the middle of the night too. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning when this happened. Uh-huh. So they said, just go to your clinic first thing in the morning. I said, okay. So the next morning we went to the clinic and my doctor was there and they took me back and they said, we're going to have to drain your ovaries of fluid because you're retaining so much fluid from the OHSS. So they put me to sleep and they assured me that everything would be okay with the embryos. And they drained, the first day they drained about 4 liters of fluid from my body.
God.
Yeah. So think of two big liters of Coke. Like,
right.
It was very just overwhelming. And I had to sit at my clinic the entire day because they had to basically squeeze me in and put me to sleep and drain the fluid. So we got there at 6 a.m. and they were able to give me pain medication. And poor Rocky had to just sit in this uncomfortable chair for like 6 hours before they could actually take me back and put me to sleep and drain the fluid. So that
Oh my gosh.
That was intense. And then the same exact thing happened 2 days after that. I had to go back again because the fluid kept retaining and I had to go back again and have the same exact thing done again. And then they drained another 3 to 4 liters of fluid because it just kept building and retaining. Yeah. It's one of those things where you think it's not going to happen to me. It's so rare and it's not going to happen to me. And then it did. I did develop OHSS with my second egg retrieval, but it wasn't as severe and I didn't have to go in for any drainings, but it was still, I mean, I was retaining fluid and uncomfortable. And the worst part about it, Allie, honestly, the worst part about it was that I looked pregnant. Like my stomach looked like I was
totally
4 or 5 months pregnant. And I didn't even want to leave my house because I didn't want somebody to be like, oh my gosh, congratulations, you're pregnant.
Right.
And I'm like, I wish I was, but no, I'm just carrying around all this fluid from fertility treatments. Yeah, that was worst part about it.
What happened next?
So they were running blood work on me. Every day that I went in for something, the ER ran blood work on me. And then each day at my clinic, they ran blood work. And unfortunately, we would see my HCG levels go down with each draw. And so we kind of knew at that point it didn't work. But we didn't get our definitive answer until 11 days after the transfer. And so we got the phone call that, you know, my levels had gone down and they were below a 5. And at my clinic, anything below a 5 is not pregnant. Anything above a 5 is considered a pregnancy. So we basically had to track my levels down. And we got the phone call that it didn't work. And it was a really hard pill to swallow, but it was also something that we had seen coming just based off of the 2 weeks of events that we went through.
Right.
And so Rocky and I packed our bags and went up north. We live in Michigan, and going up north is the thing. So it was summertime, and we decided we're going to just get away and go up north. And we did. And it was much needed, and it was great. And I look back on that trip as like a healing kind of
absolutely
trip for the two of us. Yeah. So we packed our bags. We went up north. And then on our way home from up north, I had a telehealth appointment with my IVF doctor to just follow up on everything that had happened and kind of what next steps would be.
Yeah.
And that conversation, it was a lot. And basically what came from that was, you know, we think you have endometriosis, but the only way to confirm if you have endometriosis would be to do a laparoscopy. And I don't know if you're ready for that, you know, if you want to wait. And at this time, I was like, I have nothing to wait for. I have this, I want to know. And,
right.
and I don't want to have to wait any longer, because at this point, I thought I would be pregnant by now. I just went through IVF. And so we scheduled a laparoscopy with our IVF doctor. And so in June, we did our egg retrieval and transfer. Beginning of July, we found out it didn't work. And then mid-July, I went in for my first laparoscopy, and she did confirm stage 2 endometriosis, and she treated it. And then she said, okay, when you're ready to do another egg retrieval, we will, you know, we treated the endometriosis, so hopefully we will get better results, but we will also prep, we won't prep your body with estrogen because that fuels the endometriosis. We'll
right.
prep your body with a microdose of Lupron in hopes of, you know, retrieving, she said, less eggs, but higher quality. She goes, we don't want to go for as many eggs. We will go for less, but hoping for the better quality. We did do our second egg retrieval with that game plan. I microdosed the Lupron. And again, everything looked good at my scans. My follicles were growing, you know, they were looking mature. And I went in for my egg retrieval, and that time we got 14 eggs. And so we did get less, which I knew was the goal. Mm-hmm. I was more worried about the quality. And mm-hmm. the next day we got our phone call that 4 of them had fertilized. So the fertilization rate did go up. And then they still recommended that we freeze them and work with day 3 embryos. And the idea behind that is that the day 3s have a better chance growing inside your body than they do the lab. And that is what, you know, my clinic was discussing with me. Mm-hmm. So we, after our second egg retrieval, we froze all 4 of the day 3 embryos with the intentions of transferring 2 at a time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
And being able to do 2 transfers with the hopes that both of them would work, but
right.
with the hopes that at least one of them would work. Yes.
Absolutely. You mm-hmm. sound like a medical expert, by the way that you're explaining all this, I know you've been in it for 6 years plus.
Yeah. I do feel like I have to educate myself to an extent because I also feel this, you know, responsibility to my community to not share information that's like misinformative, if that makes sense. I don't want to get online and say things that are maybe not true or that don't make sense. Like, I don't want to spread misinformation to thousands of women that are in such like a fragile state of mind
absolutely.
When they're going through infertility. So I do try to stay very educated. I ask so many questions at doctor's appointments. I'm
right.
like, so tell me what this is. Tell me how I'm going to pronounce that. I'm like, I need to know
exactly.
how to pronounce
it. Tell me about working with Anito and what that is exactly.
Okay. Yeah. So obviously trying to conceive, your hormones and your cycles mean so much throughout the process. And so Anito is an at-home hormone tracker that mm-hmm. you can use at home to track your cycles. And they track multiple hormones. So it's not just your basic LH strip that you can get from the drugstore that's like, oh, okay, here, we know that you're probably ovulating right now. And so the Anito tracker, you're able to track everything at home. And I always recommend this for like my friends or the trying to conceive girlies, because not every month are you able to get into the doctor's office and get your blood work and get your tests done and get your results. And so I think it's a great way, if you do want to track at home with the Anito tracker, to just keep track of your cycles and have that insight, even if you're not actively trying to conceive that month. And so I started using Anito right around the time of after my second egg retrieval that we were getting ready to do transfers. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to track my estrogen, and especially knowing that I have endometriosis, these were things that I wanted to keep an eye on throughout the process. And so It's one of those things that I definitely recommend if you are trying to conceive, if you're in the early stages, if you're in the thick of it, if you're at the tail end of it, if there's insight that you want to get at home, I love my Anito tracker. I think it's just a great way to have more insight. Like when we're going through fertility, we're always looking for answers. We're always looking for, you know, what will help us. And Anito's helped me with tracking at home and in my cycles and being able to look back month to month, because I've used it for my transfer cycles and I can see the trends. And I can go back, like from now, I can go back. I tracked throughout my last cycle where we did achieve pregnancy, and I can go back and I can look, okay, where were my hormones at then versus this cycle, which I really appreciate too. Being able to go back and compare, because as much as we think we're going to remember, oh, this is what happened. And then 3 months, you're like, I don't remember cycle day that was. I don't remember how I felt. And so I like being able to keep track. It gives me peace of mind.
Yes. I can't even remember this morning, like waking up and putting on clothes.
Exactly. So what did I eat for breakfast? I
don't 100%. Remember.
This episode is brought to you by Anito. For years, clinical labs were the only way to get a clear view of your hormone levels and ovulation patterns. But for many people in the trying to conceive community, especially those with hormone imbalances or conditions like PCOS, frequent lab visits can be costly, inconvenient, and take up a ton of time. This is why I'm excited to tell you all about Anito, which is unlike anything else out there. Anito is an at-home fertility monitor that tracks all four key hormones, estrogen, LH, FSH, and PDG, on a single test strip. Instead of piecing together fragments of info, Anito offers a full, clear picture of your hormone health through a data chart and clear insights that are unique to your body and your cycle. Anito is designed to work even when cycles are irregular or conditions like PCOS are in the mix. With lab-grade accuracy, Anito helps pinpoint your unique 6-day fertile window and helps predict and confirm ovulation. And that's really helpful because anovulation is one of the leading causes of infertility. The best part? Anito is used entirely at home with results available in just 10 minutes. Anito's AI-powered system learns from real hormone data and adapts, offering personalized insights that bring clarity to the process, confidence to decision-making, and a real sense of peace of mind, especially when so much else can feel overwhelming. And now, here's an incredible offer. The Anito Starter Pack is available for just $89 with the code INFERTILEAF at Anito.com. That's Anito.com, using the code INFERTILEAF. Thanks, Anito.
Okay, so what happened next?
So we did the second egg retrieval in August, and my hormones weren't as textbook that month. And so they recommended that we do a frozen transfer instead of fresh, which I was completely fine with. So the idea was to freeze them and then with my next cycle, be able to go into a transfer cycle. And we did that with the intentions. So in September of last year, we were hoping to be able to transfer, and my body was just not cooperating. My hormones were not cooperating. It kind of gave me like a reset moment of like, oh my gosh, I have been pushing my body so hard and it needs a break. Like it needs a cycle off, or maybe two or maybe three. It needs the break. And I think that's so important for us as women, is our end goal, obviously, is to get pregnant and have a healthy pregnancy and have a healthy baby. And we have this goal in our mind, and that's where we want to be so desperately that we're willing to push ourselves past the limits at some points to get there. And that's where I was. Like, it was like a hard stop. Like, my body was not doing anything it needed to be doing in order for us to get to the transfer. And I was like, wow, okay, I need to like take a fucking break, Savannah.
Yeah.
Take a break. Like, it's okay to take a break. And it took me a minute to get there. And
totally.
Anybody, like my mom, my best friends, they could have looked at me and been like, you need to take a break. And I would have been like, do not tell me that. Do not absolutely tell me what I have to do. There was nobody that was going to convince me that I needed to do it more than my body not working when it
100%. Yeah. It's like you have to get there on your own, you know?
And I did. So yeah. I reached that point and it was like, I need to take a break. I need to take a step back. I need to kind of reset. I need to let my body regulate itself. And that's when a needle came into play for me. Like, I needed to let my body regulate back to its normal cycles because I've been pushing it every totally month with treatments. And it was just not working. It really wasn't. And so that's when I started my cycle tracking journey with Anito.
Right.
I so appreciated being able to do that at home. And that's where we kind of took a little hiatus break of, you know, we just need to take a step back.
Right.
And, you know, our embryos are there. And when we're ready, we will be able to transfer them. So that was September. And we didn't do our first transfer of those two embryos until January. So we, you know, took that break September, October, November, December.
Right. Did you feel like mentally it was helped you feel better and like kind of get your relationship more focused or back on track? Not that it was
me and Rocky spent a lot of time together. We did a trip and it was fun and it was worth it. I think travel therapy is just one of those things.
Oh my God, yes.
And it was kind of like we had to hit the reset button and we still had the same end goal. Like, obviously, we still had the same end goal in mind, but just realizing it's okay if we have to wait a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what we need to do and what we have to do. And so that's, you know, that's kind of how it happened. And we did transfer two of our embryos in January and that cycle failed. Neither one of them implanted. And I was testing every day.
Right.
I can be an obsessive tester and I kind of saw it coming and that it didn't work. And that was another one of my kind of pause and reset moments, knowing that, okay, we have two embryos left. We have one transfer left. And I looked at Rocky and I was like, I want to feel like I have done everything I can possibly do to prepare my body and make it the best home for these embryos before I do another transfer. And that is when we kind of went into the reproductive immunology rabbit hole.
Tell me about that journey. Like, what did you learn from seeing those doctors? And like, how did that change your course of treatment?
Yeah. So I believe there's only 10 reproductive immunologists in the United States, which is crazy.
I heard five the other day, but yeah, it's small. It's somewhere five or
there's
10.
There's not a lot of them.
Not a lot.
And
yeah.
I feel extremely blessed and lucky because one of them is about an hour from me, which is relatively very close considering how few of them there are. And so we decided to pursue the reproductive immunology aspect and get all of that testing done. And it's very intense. There was just more that went into it. I remember when I went in for blood work, they took 31 vials of blood
in one sitting. Yeah.
And Allie, if I tell you that the first day I had blood work at my fertility clinic years ago, I passed out on the spot because I hated needles and blood work. And then fast forward over a year later, they're just taking 31 vials. And
you're just like a pig.
I didn't even bat an eye. I'm like, yep, go ahead. Like,
totally. You
know. So I know, it just felt more of it like an intense process and the testing, like they were testing for every little thing, any kind of gene mutation, any kind of autoimmune disease. And so we did get some results and, you know, I was happy to get answers, of course, but there was just some things that, you know, we didn't know that I had before. Like we didn't know that I had the MTHFR gene mutation. And so we also did a biopsy, an endometrial biopsy to, you know, check the tissue to make sure that the inside of my uterus was going to be an accepting place for the embryos.
Right.
And we got answers from that, you know, my doctor recommended I do a scratch every 3 to 4 months of trying to get pregnant. And so the immunology aspect was just more intense. Mm-hmm. And their treatment plans, and their protocols and the medications that they put you on are more intense. And Instagram censors me for talking about medication, which just kind of upsets me because it's such a huge aspect to our fertility journeys. So
how do you get around it?
I guess you're just supposed to like spell them wrong. But then when you spell them wrong, people are like, wait, so what is it?
Like, right.
I can't spell it right because then I get censored and shut down. And So I was on 30 milligrams of prednisone, which is a steroid, which is a very high dose. I mean, most doctors maybe will put patients on 5 milligrams. And I was on 30 milligrams for, you know, our last transfer. I was on a drug called Plaquenil, which is also an immunology drug. I was on a drug called Tacro, which is also an immunology. I mean, these are like intense. So from what I understand is Tacro is used for like transplant patients to help your body accept a foreign object.
Foreign object. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I was on their protocol for this transfer, and obviously, it did work, and we were able to achieve implantation, which was a huge thing for us with repeated implantation failure.
Right.
After so many years of just straight failure, like, no, it did not work at all. It was like, wow, okay, something clicked, something, we're doing something right. And it really did feel that way. And it was just such like this amazing moment of like, it's actually positive. Like, it's not just the trigger shot. Like, it's actually my body did what it was, you know, what we've been really longing and hoping and praying for so long. And so
in like a story of high highs and low lows, the highest high, right?
Yeah. Like, it was just, I mean, you are on cloud nine. I can't explain like euphoric feeling that you have when you see a positive pregnancy test. And of course you're scared because, you know, there's so many things that can happen in the infertility world. And especially when we experience and we see women that are going through so much loss and heartache. And when I saw the positive test of like, my heart was like, oh my God, I don't believe it. I'm so excited. And then the other part of me was guarded. And it was like, you know, we don't want anything bad to happen. And totally. You know, we have to be, you know, grateful that this happened, but we also have to be guarded in a sense of the hurt that can come from, you know, seeing a positive pregnancy test.
And absolutely. So, somebody described it the other day as like holding your heart in your hands. Like, you're just, you've got so much hope, but it's so scary. And, you know, after going through any sort of trauma, any sort of infertility, it's like, it sucks that you never have that unabashed, like, blissful feeling that so many other people get, you know?
I know. And it's like, you have this happiness, but then you also have this sadness of like, it could be gone tomorrow.
Right.
Like, it's here right now, but it could be gone tomorrow. And that's why I've always said it from the very beginning is like, no matter where you are in your journey, if you're going through treatments, if you just found out you're pregnant, if you're going through a loss or a miscarriage, the only thing that you can do, and what I say to myself every day, is just take it one day at a time. Because when we found out that we were pregnant last month, I remember looking at Rocky and I was like, I am so scared. Like, I'm so scared, but I'm pregnant today. So I just want to be happy that I'm pregnant today. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, maybe I won't be tomorrow, but like, I am right now. So I just want to be happy about it.
Totally. It's almost like you have to harness those wins when you can, because it like will help propel you to the next day. Like you said, sometimes it's day by day. Sometimes it's hour by hour. You know,
this is when you're reloading your portal, like, where are my results? Where are my results?
It's 100%. Literally,
it's like minute by minute, because
it
can just, your whole entire world can change with your blood work results, literally. So it's just one of those things that all you can do is wait and just take it day by day. And that's kind of always been my motto. And a way for me to not only encourage myself, but kind of encourage the community is, you know, we don't know what tomorrow will bring. And we're in this moment today, and maybe we won't be in this moment tomorrow. And it could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. Like, we're pregnant today. Maybe we won't be tomorrow. Or, you know what? We're really sad today, but maybe we won't be tomorrow. And it can go both ways.
100%.
Yeah.
So I know people who follow you know what happened next, but can you share with us?
Yeah. So we were able to transfer our last 2 day 3 embryos goes, it was June 30th of this year. So it was the day after my 30th birthday. And I kind of held this transfer a little bit closer to us in terms of not sharing like the exact timeline of how everything was happening in real time. But I was still trying to share things within a few day basis.
Right. And so we transferred. It's a tricky balance, but I feel like you're really good at that. Yeah.
I know. I try to share things in real time because it is my real life, but also give myself the opportunity to process feelings before always just posting them publicly. So we did the transfer and I think I shared about it a few days later and we were so excited. And I know my community and my followers were praying for us and rooting for us and they were so excited for us as well. And I decided that I was going to test out my trigger shot because that's just what I do. And I was super anxious and just wanted it to work. And so I started testing about 3 or 4 days after the transfer and I was keeping track of everything on a sheet. And I think about 10 days after the transfer was when we got our first positive pregnancy test and blood work. And my first beta came back pretty low. I mean, to start at 19 is pretty low. They like to see it. My clinic likes to see it around or above 50. So when they called me and they said it's positive, but it's kind of low right now, I was still, hopeful that things were going to be okay. And so then it was like the day by day mentality of, okay, I have to wait a couple of days until my next blood test because they want to see your numbers double every 48 to 72 hours. Mm-hmm. So we waited a few days and we went back and my beta went from 19 to 46. And we were like, okay, so it doubled. It was positive the first time, but it was like, oh my gosh, it's hard to believe. And, you always were. Yeah, you can worry about so many things. I mean, I was worried about chemical. I was worried about ectopic. I was worried about everything. And so when my second beta came back at 46, it was like, holy shit, it worked. This is happening. And so I actually had a out of town bachelorette weekend trip planned with my girlfriends. Like this was planned months in advance. One of my best friends is getting married. It's her bachelorette trip. Mm-hmm. And I was going back and forth with Rocky, do I go? Do I not go? Because this is such a fragile time, not only for me, but for him, for me to be away for a weekend while going through betas and being 4 weeks, 5 weeks pregnant.
Right.
I mean, it's such just a fragile time.
Right.
And so we went back and forth about it and we had did a third beta and it was increasing and my numbers were going up and I decided, I'm going to go on the trip. I can do this. And so I was in Florida and while I was in Florida, I had my fourth beta and oh my gosh, it was like the morning could not have gone by any slower. My girlfriend's sister drove me to the blood work. Luckily, I could, pretty much go to any place and get the blood work done.
Right.
Yeah. And I wasn't able to get my results until the next day, which was agonizing.
Oh my God.
It was agonizing.
And did everybody in the group know that you were going through this? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I didn't talk about it much on the trip because I didn't want to make the trip about me at all. But I also just didn't want to talk a lot about it because I was so nervous and I didn't really know how to talk about it and what to say. Because it was just a hard time. And I had a great time in Florida. It was a great trip. And when I finally did get my blood work results back, my beta was still increasing. At this point, it was over 100. And, I was still obviously still nervous. But I'm like, okay, it's going up. I mean, we are trending in the right direction.
Right.
And it might not be at the speed that every 48 hours, because they say 48 to 72. I'm like, it's going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And so I was excited. And I flew home and Rocky picked me up from the airport. And we had our next appointment on a Tuesday. I think I came home on a Sunday. And I went in for blood work. And then they called me and they're like, your beta stalled. Yeah.
I'm so sorry. Oh.
It's the one of those things you don't want to happen.
No.
And I just obviously my heart sank. And at that point, I was just in such shock. I couldn't even cry. I was just sitting there and I looked at Rocky and I'm like, it didn't really go up. It did go up, but not significantly. We were still over 100, but it plateaued, it stalled. It was that was just a telltale sign that it's not going to progress. And so I just remember looking at him and I was like just blank look on my face, no tears. And I'm like, it's over. Mm. And he was like, what do you mean? And, you know, I was like, they said, you know, it plateaued. And then that same day, because I was working with both the reproductive immunologist and the reproductive endocrinologist, the RI office called me. And the physician assistant, the PA, called, and she was super sweet. And she was like, I'm so sorry. You know, I was really hopeful for you guys because it, you know, was trending up. And she's like, I hope we can continue to work together. And I know that this is really hard, but I'm hopeful because it did work. And, you know, the last thing you want to hear from people was like, well, at least you got pregnant.
At least,
like,
you got pregnant.
And she didn't say it like that at all. But, you know, I was in my mind, I'm like, I know it did work this time, but it still hurts and it still sucks that this is the way that it's going to end. And so they had advised me to stop all of my hormones, you know, stop the pyo injections. And I was supplementing estrogen at the time too. And so she was like, you can wait to hear from your RE's office as well, but, you know, we would suggest that you stop all your hormones. And so that was hard to hear and that was hard to do. And yes. Then I was slightly concerned. There was the slight chance that it could have still been an ectopic pregnancy. And luckily that wasn't the case, but I did stop the hormones. And then a few days later, I was able to miscarry naturally. I didn't have to go in for a DNC, mm-hmm. but it was still just, I mean, when I tell you, like, I didn't even know what day it was for, like, a whole week. Yeah,
no,
it was
course.
Like, I just, like, reclused and threw myself in the basement with all the lights off and was, like, put my phone on do not disturb. Like, I didn't want to talk to people and I didn't want to explain it because, you know, you're just in it. And
it's so hard. It's so raw.
You feel like nobody can say the right thing.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing people can say is, I'm so sorry. And like, I didn't want to hear like, at least it worked, or you can still try again, or you can do this, or you can do that. And so many people that mean well and that love you think that if they give you a solution that they're helping you.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel that way at all. It's like,
absolutely.
All you can say to me is like, I'm so sorry. I love you. I'm here if you need anything. I don't want to hear at least this or at least that. I just want to like be with my husband. We, you know, we hid in our basement for a few days and ate comfort food and watched movies and just did what we could do and spend time with each other to just kind of process the emotions. And I don't think it's anything that you get over in a week or a day or a month.
Or ever. Honestly, Savannah.
I think it's something you just carry with you. And I think time helps a little bit, but it's just something that now it's a part of our story. It's a part of our journey. And it's something that we have to live with and carry. And at the end of the day, I know we were able to get pregnant. And I'm so grateful for that. And I hope that we're able to do that moving forward in our journey and that our miracle comes and we were able to bring home a healthy, happy baby someday in some way. But the summer of 2025 will always be such a heartbreaking memory for us.
I'm so sorry. And I know this is so recent. And again, you know, I'm really honored that you're sharing it here and everyone listening
it helps.
Is so grateful.
It helps to share. I know it doesn't
me too.
Help everybody,
that's how I get through stuff is by talking about it. And, you know, obviously that's why I started this podcast in 2019.
I hide for a week and then I come out of hiding and I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to talk about it kind of thing.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Yeah. But thank you for giving me the platform to talk about it.
Always. I would love to share
daily, but you know, I know there's so many women out there that struggle silently or don't have that person to lean on. And so I appreciate that you had this platform for me to share.
Absolutely. Thank you. And, you know, I think it's important to give people follow you on social, but sometimes to get the full story and hear the context and the emotions and, you know, the full roller coaster that you've been on, I think helps too, because it's a lot of people, you know, everybody's story is different, but everybody's story is so similar too.
Right. I mean, I can make a 10-second reel that, you know, can maybe show you a glimpse, but you know, it's my everyday life and there's more than just 10 seconds to
it. Totally.
So,
and I would love to continue talking and, you know, do a part two down the line.
Yeah. I can talk for days, Allie. So whenever.
I love it.
Okay. Thank you again to my sweet, sweet friend, Savannah at Infertility Friends on Instagram. You can follow along there. And like I said, we will probably do a part two as her story progresses. But I really am grateful to her for just being so open and honest and for wanting to help everybody listening today and everybody who follows her on her Instagram stories and all the people who've supported her in her life too. So thank you, Savannah. If you guys are interested in my children's books, you can find them at infertilifegroup.com. There's Work of Art, the OG story, and then there's Beautiful Bird. The third one's being printed right now, so more on that soon. But go check them out on my website, or if you want to see some of the illustrations and the covers, you can go to Instagram, InfertiLife Stories, and see some there. Also, open invite to check out Fertility Rally. If you want to come to one of our virtual support groups, shoot me a DM. You can check out our website at fertilityrally.com. We have IRL events. We have private Facebook groups. We have virtual events. We've got tons of videos. We have Fertility Rally Live number 10 coming up soon. So check it out. Follow us for all the things. We are here for you, and you are not alone. Thank you, as always, for listening. You guys are the best. Thanks again to Savannah, and I will talk to you guys next time.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.